Emo. Emotional music for emotional people. E. M. O.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another week, another episode here of Classically Emo. I actually say that again, and after the good old ad and we start the episode, I say that exact same thing word for word again. So you get to hear it twice. Lucky you. Happy Thursday. It's officially Friday Junior. It's weird doing this on a Thursday, although our literal first episode that we ever released was on a Thursday. I couldn't tell you why. Honestly, I forgot what day it was when I released it. I'm pretty sure that's why. Normally, obviously, we come out on Wednesdays. However, a special exception was made for this week. A special exception is literally one day, and it's no parents, no rules, right? Because the guest we have on, Molly Huddleston, has her own podcast that goes up on Wednesday. So why cause conflict? I think I tweeted out the other day that we respect our podcast elders. She's been doing her podcast for almost a year now called Generation GC, and she goes into that a little bit more when she kind of joins us in here, like I said, after the ad, and she'll kind of talk to you a little bit more about that and what that is and how long she's been doing that and all the great things she's got going on there. But yeah, we do a phenomenal record this week called I No Longer by Pinamino, which is one of my favorite records probably the last 10, 15 years. If I were to think of like the ultimate quote unquote emo records of the last 10 years or so, I would easily pick I No Longer. And then I'd go for Home Like No Place Is There by The Hotelier, like hands down. So when I decided to launch this podcast, this was a record that I knew immediately I wanted to get covered because it's such a phenomenal record. It's not a quote unquote classic in the sense, you know, that was big 15, 18, 20 years ago. But it should have been. And Molly and I kind of talk about why and all of that that goes into all that bullshit later on. So no spoilers or anything. Other than that, it's a phenomenal record. And so I knew that I wanted to talk about it, and there's nobody better to talk to it about than Molly. Her and I have been friends forever, almost, it seems, probably coming up on 10 years now, I think. And our mutual love for this band knows no bounds. And, you know, I have no idea if they're going to listen to this, but if they're going to listen to this, and I hope they know how much we adore them. And that I know there's a group of people, there's a lot of people out there that still do. And if you're not familiar with the record, then you should be, because the best comparison I can give you is if you've ever listened to Jimmy Eat World's Futures or a single song off Jimmy Eat World's Futures, that's kind of what this record is. It's the best Jimmy Eat World album that Jimmy Eat World never released. I'll just say that because that's just fucking facts. So I'm going to stop rambling now because, you know, what else? I could literally go for a whole hour before the episode starts about my love for Pinamino and this record. So hopefully, you know, you're a fan of this record already and you can relate to what we're talking about. If you don't know it, then I hope that after us talking about it for an hour or so, you decide that you need to listen to it. And then after that, if you don't fall in love with it, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say you're wrong, but I'm not going to say you're right either. So thank you so much for checking us out for another week, and we will see you next week. All right. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode here of Classically Emo. This week, we're doing a phenomenal record I wanted to do this. There's really one person that came in mind, and that's Molly Huddleston, who's here with me. Her and I have been friends for maybe 10 years now.
9 years. That's my goodness. 9 years this spring, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be, yes, right. It was 2012 because it was that year. It was like a few months before I graduated high school.
Yeah.
At a good old Bowling for Soup concert. So,
oh, yeah.
Those were good times, simpler times. But Molly and I have bonded over this record it'll be 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to talk about Pinamino and specifically I No Longer. And we have a lot of thoughts on that record that we're going to dive into. But Molly, first, I guess just kind of tell everybody kind of, you know, a little bit about you. What music did you first kind of find? And like, is there an album that you first specifically fell in love with?
Oh, yes, there absolutely is. So the first album that I bought, like, with my own money. And, you know, I had, growing up, I would listen to, like, Spice Girls and Ricky Martin. Sure. Those were the big ones for me. I did have a Sugar Ray CD when I was, like, 8 that I loved.
Nice. I love it.
The first one that, like, I sought out and bought was Good Charlotte's The Young and the Hopeless.
Perfect.
And that kind of changed everything. You know, it led me to a lot of related bands, but definitely, like, Good Charlotte kind of has always been number one. Very, very much so. So that was the big one. And, you know, Simple Plan, My Chem, Blink. Green Day, American Idiot came out when I was 13, so that was pretty revolutionary. And in terms of, like, what made me kind of want to write about music and, you know, which eventually became the podcast and everything, but was Angels and Airwaves, We Don't Need to Whisper, and kind of reading a lot about the Blink breakup and reunion and all of that, and listening to a lot of Angels and Airwaves.
Yeah, I love it. That's a great record. That is it's a great record. I know that's kind of where you started, you know, your first website too, right? Circles and Sound Waves. And then I think after that, I know when you kind of got done with that, you did some Substream stuff for a while. And then now you do Generation GC, right? Which is a podcast about Good Charlotte, which I was on a few months ago, I think. I don't know. Time is a social construct.
That your episode went up, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk a little bit about that. I know you mentioned that, you know, Good Charlotte, The Young and the Hopeless was the first record that you really bought with yourself and kind of dove into that. So I'm sure starting a podcast about them was kind of a natural progression.
Yeah, it definitely was. So, I mean, like you had said, I ran Circles and Sound Waves. You know, I wrote for Access for a bit. I was writing for Substream. And when I left Substream, like, I knew I was going to put out my book. I told you I hated New York.
Yeah.
And then I put that out. I was, like, doing some press for it. And I was kind of trying to figure out what I would do next. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to switch gears. Like, I decided I didn't want to necessarily go in the, like, freelance, you know, essentially what I had been doing for Substream for different outlets, you know. I wanted to do something a little different, something that was more focused and something that would allow me to be number one, detail oriented in my research, like, get super nuanced and detailed, and number two, something that I could have, like, a personal aspect. And beginning of March, just before the world shut down, I just had this idea for the podcast. I was like, well, I could never get Benji Madden to sit down with me to ask about every single Good Charlotte song individually. So, like, what if I get some other people? So the podcast was born, and then I started working on it. Honestly, like, when lockdown went into place and I was like, holy shit, I'm kind of lonely and depressed. I need something to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It feels weird that it's been, you know, so long already, right? Yeah. I mean, you've got, how many episodes have you put out so far?
So episode 49, I'm announcing it today.
Oh my gosh.
That'll come out this week.
Nice. What one is it? I mean, this will be up, of course, long by then. Your episode will be up long by then, but which one is it?
So it is on the song Prayers from Generation
Perfect.
RX.
Perfect.
And my guest is Nina McLaren, who I connected with her over Twitter a while ago.
Sure.
And she is my first guest from Germany, which is
nice.
Cool.
Hey, there we go. It's going international, right?
Exactly.
Going global.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a fan base that's all over the world, right? All over the, all everywhere. So I'm sure you're kind of seeing that as well, right? People listening from all over, which is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, when I checked right at the end of 2020, per Anchor, my stats said that, like, out of my top 10 most listened to countries, or the countries where I have the most listeners, something like half of those do not have English as a primary language. You know, and Nina, who I just had on the show, German, you know, obviously she speaks English.
Right,
fluently, but it wasn't her first language. And I've connected with a few other people on socials who are like, oh, I started listening to your podcast and it's really helping me understand English better.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
That's so cool.
Like, that's amazing.
Considering, like, my only other language would be French, and, you know, after AP French, I don't after AP French, you know, 12 years ago, I haven't really continued to practice it much.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. I mean, it's yeah. So it's going well, right? I mean, it's going awesome with a lot of reasons, but as long as you're having fun with it, which is, I mean, it's an hour of time about Good Charlotte, an hour or so roughly that you're talking about Good Charlotte. So what could go wrong?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad to hear it's going well. We, you know, we'll kind of switch over, I guess, into Pen and Middle, because I know there's a lot to talk about, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And first of all, I just want to give people some background in case they're not familiar with it, because it's probably not, you know, I mean, it wasn't unfortunately a big record, but it came out over 5 years ago, which is weird, October 23rd, 2015, via Bad Timing Records, which again, like I said, it's weird. I feel like it was just yesterday.
Can we talk about Bad Timing?
We can talk about Bad Timing Records. Bad Timing Records, it was an interesting fit at the time, okay? Because now I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure, like, I'm not, like, Bad Timing Records, I believe, at that time was, like, just doing vinyl presses, right? Like, they were doing kind of, like,
re-releases. I think, like, primarily, yeah.
Like, they weren't, like, a full-functioning record label, which is fine. Like, it's not a bad thing at all.
Yeah.
But, like, when you're putting out a new record, I feel like that wasn't too hot. Right, I feel like that was just unfortunate, and
it was definitely unfortunate. And I think, you know, as backstory, I'm sure some people listen to this now, maybe they don't, but, like, you know, Logan, you and I both know that they were kind of on the verge of signing with a different label, that might have been bigger,
sure.
And then that didn't happen, which, like, I guess, I don't know. Can I go down this rabbit hole yet?
We can go down this rabbit hole. I wanted to bring it up, too. I just wanted to admit specifics.
Yeah,
because we both know who it is and then who got signed instead of them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's tough.
But I think, like, you know, they had label issues with their first album.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people, I mean, that was kind of how I found them at first, was, like, hearing all this drama on the internet about their label issues, and I was like, well, what the F? And then I was like, all right, like, let me go check this band out. And I was like, oh, they're really good. And then the record came out, and I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And then it was like, so that was like 2012, the first record came out.
Yeah. Yeah. They,
and
then it
was like, what, 2014 they were recording, and it ended up being like delayed because of label issues again, although different label issues, you know, it ended up being delayed quite a bit. I no longer, and I feel like that, unfortunately, as much as, you know, I don't want to put all the blame on Bad Timing themselves, but just like the the bad timing of the fact that it got so delayed, and that, you know, people kind of knew it was coming, but maybe that, you know, the band had maybe lost steam, I don't know, like that might have affected the excitement for it.
Yeah, it did. I agree with that entirely, and that's where I really feel bad for them. And for some backstory on some folks regarding that first record, I don't have a problem talking about this one, because I mean, this one's all out there, right? I mean, everybody, if you knew them, that they were very vocal about this at that time, you know. But yeah, their self-titled record came out in 2012. It was supposed to be released on Paper and Plastic Records. But they had to leave that label because their label before that, Panic Records, was threatening to sue essentially everybody, like everybody in the band, everybody at Paper and Plastic. So there were never any pre-orders that they could do. And this is when they were still trying to put it out on their record label, like on Paper and Plastic. They couldn't do pre-orders. Yeah. There was nothing like that. But yeah, they ended up just having to leave the label and then release it for free. And set up like a donation, like, hey, if you want to just happen to donate to our band instead of buying the record, here you go. And then, for I No Longer, they were on that verge of signing with the redacted label, so to speak. So they had their studio time booked with Paul Levitt. And then when that all backed out, they had their record done. It was a very expensive record because Paul Levitt's a great producer. He's got an insane, like, you know, list of bands he's worked with. And so they had nowhere to take it, you know, which is part of that delay. And then when they signed with Bad Timing,
that became a thing of how the hell do you like use a record label that's not like a record label for this, you know? And
right.
It was just tough. It was a bad scenario. I don't want to put the blame on Bad Time because I think they, you know, did what they could. They came and said, hey, this is a great record. Yeah, let's do something.
They did what they could to step up to the plate. And
yeah.
You know, I know because wasn't Zach Zerillo like working? Wasn't that his label?
And that was Zach Zerillo and like, Thomas from Absolute Pop, Thomas Nasif, yeah, I can tell you. Yeah.
I think so. And both of those sites, both of those outlets were like, you know, gave so much press and promo to Fundamento. And so I could totally understand. I mean, of course, yeah, if I was in that position, I totally would have like wanted to step up and be like, all right, let's do it. Like, if there's going to be a time. And I don't know. I feel like we could do more of this maybe even after we talk about the record itself.
Yeah.
Like kind of theories on why, you know, why reception for the record was the way it was. But I feel like we should save that.
We should. The last thing I want to say before I forget is what's so, the tops, like the cherry on top of all this, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I remember them tweeting about this. When the record came out, they didn't like get on the Billboard charts because Billboard didn't count the vinyl sales. Like, if I'm remembering this correctly, I think there was something like that, that it was like they didn't get on the Heat Seekers chart because Billboard didn't, like, they didn't get the vinyl, either they didn't get them in to the, you know, at time for Billboard to count them, or Billboard just didn't count them. I don't, it's one of those two. I don't remember which it was, but I remember seeing them tweet that and I was like, oh, fucking course. Like, of course.
Yeah, right.
Go
right.
through all this and why not just have one other thing, you know?
Yeah.
So that's tough. But yeah, let's make it more positive for now because this is a great record.
Record
it's a very not positive record, but
no,
you know, there's, I feel like we could really do every song on this record, and I could talk about every song on this record forever, but we shouldn't. However, I do want to talk about Small Talk, and then My Solution Is in the Lake, because what an intro, and like what an opening song, and like it's so, you know, when it goes from, you know, Small Talk to My Solution, it's just like it goes so well, you know, that transition is just great, and it pretty much immediately lets you know that you're in for like a 12 track album of nothing but pain. And that's what I love. Like, that's what I love about this record so much.
Yeah. I think these are both good examples of songs of like what I feel like Pentimento's done since the beginning is like kind of writing a lot about their feelings, but you really don't necessarily know what the situation is they're writing about. So that's something that I've appreciated about them, because it's like you might be like, well, I don't have this exact situation to relate to, but like it doesn't really matter with Pentimento, because you know that in Small Talk they're talking about feeling that distance between someone you used to be close with.
Sure.
You know, in My Solution Is in the Lake, you know, they're talking about defeat and depression to a certain extent. So I think that's something that I really like about those songs. And I think Small Talk is the kind of song that it's like, if they were playing in like huge venues, oh my god, like Small Talk into My Solution would have been a great set opener too.
It would have been. And it's so good. I mean, you know, My Solution Is in the Lake is also now like their top song on Spotify, which I think
Just Friends has more
plays. Is Just Friends their top song on Spotify?
Yeah.
Interesting, because those are both, first of all, Just Friends is very good too. That song hurts in a lot of ways, but My Solution Is My Solution Is in the Lake is up there too, so it's the number two song then, right? So I think it deserves that, and it's, you know, it's, there's so much I could say, and again, I think the thing that I keep going back to with this song is the final bridge of that song, because it really just makes me want to like jump off of a bridge, you know, like it hurts. And it's good.
relevant that My Solution Is in the Lake is like their follow-up to The Bridge, right? So like, and I feel like I asked them about this when I interviewed them, like right when the album came out, and this was in Baltimore where they recorded the record, not at the studio, but like they were on tour in Baltimore, and I happened to interview them there, and they said something, I think it was Mike who said that, either Mike or Vinny, I don't know. But I asked them, I was like, well, tell me about, like, my solution is in the lake and the bridge. Like, how are they related? Mm-hmm. And what they said was essentially, like, you know, the bridge is about someone who has to make a choice.
Yeah.
And my solution is in the lake is someone who has made their choice. And, like, yeah. you know, you could, if we're talking about depression and, like, the bridge is the song about a choice, mm-hmm. that's a fucking dark song. Can I curse? Can I curse?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Like, if we're talking about, like, depression and defeat and, like, you have the bridge and that's mm-hmm. the song about the choice, like, the bridge could quite literally be, you know, standing on the bridge, like, should I jump mm-hmm. off the bridge? And I'm like, oh, my solution is in the lake. I should jump off the bridge into the lake. Yeah. And, like, yes, that's incredibly dark. I recognize that, like, as upbeat as, like, maybe I sound right now. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that to relate to this song. Like, I think anytime I relate to, you know, my solution or the bridge is, like, just anytime you feel like you're kind of at the crux of something and you're like, shit, do I make a choice? Do I do this? Oh, like, I feel really defeated now. I made the wrong choice, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it is. It's, I also didn't realize I made a music video for that song. I just looked that up. Yes, I did not realize that. So that's interesting. That's, I had no idea. I have to watch that later. But yeah, this song, I don't know. I remember seeing them on tour for this because they did that tour with Awillaway. Awillaway. This is so good too. And they played this song and I was like, man, like, you know, it was interesting because it was like right on the time of the record came out and obviously the crowds weren't like huge, you know, but everybody there had already known like the songs and they talked about that live. They're like, it is amazing that you know this. And it is. I mean, I think that's kind of...
the tour was like right when the record came out.
Yeah, it was at that... I think it was that week or like the week after the record came out. So you didn't really have a whole lot of time to dive into it. But yet the people that were there and the people that wanted to see the band were like, I'm going to dive into this whole thing anyway. You know? And it's great. I would put this song on my like on my MySpace if MySpace was a thing right now, and it would still be on there to this day.
You could make it. You could make it your Tinder anthem. Although I don't know if this. I don't know. I, as soon as I said that, I'm like, I don't know if I would put this as my Tinder
anthem. I think you'd get a lot of questions.
I think mine is "Shut Up and Dance" by Off the Moon, which is like a much better.
That's Tinder a much like more of a beat song than.
Yeah, much more. Like if I saw, I don't know, if I saw this as someone's Tinder anthem, I would be like, well, on the one hand, like this person likes Pentimento, but on the other hand, like, are they okay?
Are they okay? Yeah, I mean, are you okay? Yeah, that made the song. Oh my goodness, I will put it as like my Facebook song. I think Facebook has songs now, so that might be a better spot than a dating app for sure.
Yeah,
but. Absolutely. Well, I wanted to, you know, kind of sway in that or kind of segue into the next song, which I thought was great, was Sink or Swim. Because I think this was the first, like, song they released from the album, I believe. I know Stuck Forever, like, came out previously on, like a 7-inch that they did.
But I think this was, like, the, okay, this is, like, the album. Yeah.
I think this is the quote-unquote single, right? They announced the album. They're like, here's the single, and it's Sink or Swim. Which is great because this song, I think, to me... is like a pop punk song, but not really. I always compare it to like Jimmy Eat World with Futures. This whole record in general, I compare to like Jimmy Eat World's Futures because I think like stylistically it's very similar to that. And like this is where that song is like almost like their pain, so to speak, right? Like Jimmy Eat World had Pain, which is the first song they released, and this is kind of like that, you know, where it almost sounds like upbeat. It's almost is like, oh, this is like a kind of good upbeat song, but lyrically obviously it's not, you know, like
I feel like this song was a clear, in a sense, a clear follow-up to Stuck Forever, and I think I think to some extent this song could be about, you know, their experience as a band. You know, are we gonna sink or swim? You know, what's next? How is this gonna work out? Something I feel like common in Pentimento's music is a lot of not just depression, but, you know, insecurities and like self-worth issues, kind of these like effects that you have from someone who maybe struggles with depression or feels like in general life hasn't worked out in their favor. And I feel like, so I'm gonna, it's like a slight tangent.
Yeah, go ahead.
But someone recently sent me the song. The artist is Days and Days, and the song was Misanthropic Drunken Loner, I think it was called.
Interesting. Okay.
And I listened to it, and I was like, it's okay, but literally what I said was like, this is too self-deprecating for me.
Sure.
And I feel like Pentimento does the, you know, let's talk about my insecurities. Like, I don't know if I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm worth anything. I feel like I'm a burden, you know, whatever, et cetera, without going into the, like, just total self-deprecation and, you know, flagellation of yourself. And I don't know exactly where that line is, but I feel like there are not over that line.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think this song is the perfect example of that, right? I mean, the whole song. Yes. I mean, literally, the first line is, I'm an inconvenient thing, right?
Yes.
You know, and but I think it's, you know, it's almost like, you know, it's self-deprecating in a sense, but it's not self-deprecating. I don't think it's self-deprecating to be self-deprecating. I don't know if that makes sense, but like, I don't think they're, you know, writing, I don't think they were writing this to be like, oh, like, woe is me. Like, look how bad, you know, things are. I think it was just that brutal, like, I actually feel like nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Which is so sad because
it is sad.
Because I hate that that's, you know, where they were. I think Mike wrote a lot of lyrics, right? Kind of where, like, Mike was.
Yeah,
Mike wrote
most of the lyrics,
at that time. But, you know, for them to be able to channel it into, obviously, music is, like, a beautiful thing that we all love about, you know, music and specifically this record for us right now. But, yeah, I think they walked that line. And I don't know how – yeah, I'm with you. I don't know how I would define it. Like, I don't think it's black and white. I think it's a very nuanced kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's almost like – case by case, like, okay, like, this one did it, or, you know, this one's like too much, like too, like, oh, look how bad my life is, you know.
Right Well, it's okay, so like with that song that I mentioned, Misanthropic Drunken Loner by Days and Days, that was what I didn't like about that song, was like it felt like identifying with I'm like a piece of shit and I'm worthless.
Sure.
You know, in other news, you know, you could talk about the real friends, sad boys thing.
Sure.
Right. Like I find it off putting when someone describes themselves as a sad boy, you know, like, yeah, Pentimento writes a lot of really like sad songs and a lot of songs that talk about like pain in different ways. But and don't get me wrong, I like Real Friends, and I've seen Real Friends a million times, and they are always so good live.
Absolutely.
But I think, I don't know, I don't want to like derail this into like talking about other bands, but I feel like, you know, part of maturity, I think, is like being able to, part of, not just maturity, because it's not just age, but like,
right, mm-hmm,
self-growth, part of that is acknowledging, you know, your issues or your weaknesses or your faults without like identifying with them.
Sure. Yeah absolutely. I agree, like, kind of where you're going with that Real Friends thing, because obviously, you know, what they did, which, you know, to their credit, I mean, it got them success, right? They kind of really accepted that they were that sad boy pop punk, right?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, that catapulted them to having, you know, the success they did with getting their record deal and then putting out a few records. I don't know if they're an active band or not anymore, but that's off topic. But yeah, I agree. Like, I love them. And, you know, especially at that time when I was in high school, you know, I really loved them. And now I'm like, okay, you know, some of it hasn't aged as well. But like, I think this record, and like you said, Pentimento did it in the sense that you can listen to this five, you know, obviously it's been 5 years, and even in 5 years from now, and it's not going to be like, ooh, like they wrote that. Like, it's not going to come up and be like, oh, like that really hasn't aged well, you know?
No, it's aged very well for me. It's, you know, I haven't listened to the record like a handful of times getting ready for this.
Yeah.
But like, I haven't had it on repeat, honestly, that much.
Sure.
In recent years. And I think, honestly, a big part of that, it's slightly partial. It's not so much where I was when it came out, but I think it's, like, where I am mentally
sure.
today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that speaks very well about my mental health, you know?
Yeah.
And like I've mentioned Pentimento in other contexts that, like, they're a band that for me, it's like I associate them with times when, like, I've been really depressed, so I don't always have them on mm-hmm. like constant repeat. Because luckily, you know, I definitely have like anxiety and stuff still, and I'm not saying I'm like perfect, but like
sure.
in terms of like depression and like the sadness on a daily level, not necessarily something that's as frequent for me. So I haven't had this record like on constant repeat, like
yeah.
honestly, for like a couple of years. And I think, you know, that largely speaks to like where my mental health has been.
Which is a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to go back to sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you want to talk about songs that are hard to go back to. That's a great way to go into Tiger Eye.
Ooh, okay. I have another one that, well, we can do it after Tiger Eye.
Yeah, absolutely.
One that wasn't on your list. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We can do Tiger Eye and then go into that. Oh, yeah. I think Tiger Eye, I wanted to bring it up because that song also just hits very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of the perfect example of what they can do and how they do it, you know, because I'm pretty yes. sure it's about his father, right?
Yeah. 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 He says, because in the bridge, they say, my father right. said to me,
mm-hmm.
One of the best lines in the bridge, don't you dare love anyone that doesn't deserve your love.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, that's a life lesson. That's like something I had to take to heart. That was a lesson I had to learn something. It's a lesson a lot of people have to mm-hmm. learn. I think.
It's a very, like, that, again, that final bridge is like a very kind of like devastating, yet like that weird level of like, I don't know, almost, I don't want to say hopefulness, but like almost, you know, I mean, you know, letting go of something or someone, in this case being like your father,
yeah,
is terrible, right? I mean, that's not easy.
It's like what I get from this song, you know, especially listening to this song now after, you know, having recently lost
sure.
someone,
mm-hmm.
what I get from this song is the confrontations you're forced to make
yeah.
when, like, that's happening or that's about to happen. And because I like this song, he says in the beginning, when I get that call, I'll be sure to put pedal to the floor.
Yeah.
I think so I took this song to mean that he's like anticipating something happening, and it's like
yeah.
you know, kind of forcing him to reflect on like what that relationship has meant and what mm-hmm. what that all means.
Yeah, absolutely. And then holding on to those lessons, right? I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, part of
yeah.
it, especially when he says, you know, my father says to me, and then he talks about, you know, taking your biggest swing at the world, and then mm-hmm. like, don't you love anyone that doesn't deserve your love? I think that's where it's like confronting the fact that, like, any minute now, like, that call was gonna come, right? And I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
And then you're kind of like, okay, like, this sucks, but like, I'm gonna remember X, Y, and Z, you know, these lessons they taught me. And that's like, that's that kind of beautiful thing about holding on to those moments, you know, like those things, while letting, like, accepting that you're gonna have to let somebody go. And I think that's
yeah.
where that song is, and that's why it's pain. All it is pain, but it's
yeah.
great. Like, it's, I think it's
yeah.
a good song in that sense of, again, how they walk that line of like being just, this is what I'm going through, but it's not, you know, you can tell that they're writing out of a place of sincerity, but not to where it's too specific that you can't, you know, I mean, it's obviously, he says, my father says to me, but I think you can apply that to literally anybody, right?
100%. And like, you know, my father is alive and well, you
right.
know, my
mm-hmm.
my grandmother passed away recently, but I think even like in the lessons that are, you know, he's reflecting on in that bridge, I think are absolutely something that
yeah, absolutely.
People can, I think, take from, you know, whether or not they, you know, have lost someone or are thinking they are likely going to lose someone
right. mm-hmm.
soon. I think it, well, and it's like, it's, that's again where I feel like they are talking about their pain, but are not identifying it with it, sure. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's not saying, oh, shit, my dad's going to die. I'm, like, really fucking sad anticipating that. He's like, all right, my dad's going to die. And I'm, like, trying to reflect on all these lessons he's taught me. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, I know when the call comes, I'm just going to rush there and, like, enjoy whatever time I can. But absolutely. He's reflecting on the lessons. I think the way that Jerry is, like, kind of shouting the vocals in that bridge, you just feel, like, such a pain. And so mm-hmm. it's, like, a raw feeling.
Yeah. Oh, man. Now I'm going to listen to it. I can picture it so perfectly. Like, in my head, I'm just like, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, like, I remember this. Like, it is great. Yeah, I agree with all that. I think everything that they did for this song and for the majority of, like, I don't think there's anything I would change on the record. You know, like, I think all of it was crafted to be exactly what it is. And that's, to me, that's what makes it so bummer that, obviously, like we talked about earlier, everything that happened for why it didn't quite take off or whatever. Because I think they put everything into it, expecting it to, you know, expecting X, Y, and Z to happen. And then when they did it happen, it was like, well, shit.
I mean, but it's like, you have to put all of that into it, because if you make a record that's just like, and you're not putting 10,000% into it, then, like, people can tell, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what song did you want to bring up here?
Yeah, so I wanted to bring up the song Gateway.
Okay.
Which I don't know if you know this, but it's the, do you remember they had, like, art kind of with each song?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for Gateway, it was the arch. So I don't know if it's, I don't know if this song, I'm not sure if it was written in St. Louis or if it was written about something that happened in St. Louis.
Sure.
I believe Jeremiah wrote this one. It's always been one of my favorites on the record. I love how calm it sounds at first, and they talk about, you know, you have to hit rock bottom before you learn to be okay. I kind mm-hmm. of feel like and maybe this is just me, like, this is completely me interpreting it. I have no idea what it was written about, because this is one that, like, mm-hmm. definitely you just really don't know. I always interpreted it to be about, like, a drug overdose or, like, something along those lines, because mm-hmm. they talk about back to your old ways, which I interpreted as, you know, unhealthy coping mechanisms and the need to kind of get rid of those demons or addiction, and you know, the need to fight the underlying issues in order to get rid of the unhealthy coping mechanisms.
Sure.
Like, I never did drugs or anything, but I've definitely had coping mechanisms that were, like, not super great. And I think it's totally true that, like, if you're gonna get past that and take care of yourself, like, you can't do that without addressing what's underneath.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, no matter what it is, you know, no matter what kind of, whether it is a drug or if it's any type of whatever that mechanism is. And I agree. I don't know if it's tough. Yeah, you're right. Like, you don't know what exactly it's about. I would say it's definitely either about something like you mentioned, or even just, I don't know. I would definitely say it's not a relationship, right? Like, it's certainly not, you know, I don't think it's about a person, you know, whether it's,
like, right. Like, when he says, I thought I chased you away.
Yeah.
I didn't see the you as a person. I saw correct. The you as, like, you know, an addiction or an unhealthy coping mechanism.
Right. Yeah. Or, like, even, like, you know, whatever, if it's, like, you know, mental health, I could even see that potentially, you know, if it's whether it's depression or whatever mental kind of thing you've got going on, I think it could be about that, you know. Especially when he says, I guess I misunderstood the depth of the will that it takes, you know.
I think
that's a very, like, powerful kind of line that's, you know, true as someone that has battled, you know, mental health and then mm-hmm. addiction and all that stuff. I think it could apply to all of that, you know. Because it is a tough, it is a very tough thing to get through.
It is. And it's like, it's like a constant effort. Like, it's not just, you know, like, I went to therapy a couple of years ago, and I've been to therapy, you know, a handful of times in my life, and I've taken medication before. I'm not, like, shy about that. But it's not just, frankly, it's not just go to therapy. It is like a willpower kind of thing to a certain extent. Like, and you know, for a lot of people, medication, and definitely for me, when I took medication, it helped me because it like gave me, like, medication gave me the willpower, I think, to take better care of myself, which was really huge. But like, it's a constant thing. And like, I do yoga pretty much every day, and I write in my journal, you know, I have things like that. But like, I have to keep doing them.
Yeah.
Because if I don't do yoga at all for like a few weeks, like, yeah, I'm probably not going to be sleeping as well.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
It's absolutely, it's a constant thing. And sometimes it's hard, and sometimes it's easy to be like, oh, I wish I didn't have to like work at this. But no, like, you have to take care of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's kind of where this lies, for sure. You know, and it's exactly that. Exactly. Now, are there, I guess for me, you know, if we want to talk about other tracks that really stand out, all of them, perhaps. I think all of them really do.
I mean,
but if I had to single it down, I would say, you know, Clever Reason, I think, is very good.
I feel like Clever Reason, I never got into that song.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. I think it's such a different song for the album. That's why I really enjoy it.
It's definitely different.
And I really like Slow But Sure, and then I love Stuck Forever.
Yeah.
And I also, as a bonus, I really like All the While, which is not on the record, but it was on that 7-inch they did of Stuck Forever, which came out 3 months before the record or something, which is simply one of the, like, I think that if that were on the album, that would be my favorite song on the album.
Yeah.
Because it's very, that's also, again,
I
very
almost
devastating.
Wonder why that wasn't on the album.
I don't know. I don't know why. I wonder if they just, they had to cut it, but they wanted to put it out, or, you know, I'm not sure. But that's a very depressing song itself, talking about being, you know, replacing somebody in a relationship, right? I mean, it's that's a brutal one. But those would be mine. What would be yours if you had to pick ones that really stand out to you?
Again, definitely. It's like, it's short, but it's devastating, and it's one of those, like, you know, if you don't relate to that, maybe you kind of don't get it. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a really powerful song. And I also had noted, I really loved in Tell Me just how delicate the vocals are.
Yeah.
When he says, please let this be the end. I'm like, that's such a great way to end the record.
Yeah.
It was also definitely a standout for me.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Again, is a song that, I think it's just over a minute, right? Like, it's not very long at all. But I think it does that spot very well. I think it's number 7 or so. It's like right at the halfway point.
Yeah.
Right in the middle. But yeah, that's, what is that? Tell the truth. You just need me. Yeah. That's oof. Yeah. There's a line that I think that says, I can't bring myself to do anything but sleep. Right. And, that's a good mood too.
Right. Right.
It's a very, that was definitely a 2020 mood. And as we head into 2021, you know, that's tough. But, what do you think, I guess, you know, if we kind of go into, I don't really talk about like critical response and legacy of these records because they're normally like seminal, like bigger albums, right?
Yeah. But I think that's relevant though. The critical response, I think that's relevant.
Critical
here.
Response is relevant here because, you know, although they didn't get a lot of reviews, I think the ones that they did
the
get were positive.
They got were all, they were like all almost really good. Yeah. I think my review was the first one to go up.
Yeah.
And I remember like, as it was coming out, you know, as they were announcing it, they, you know, Bad Timing was doing their press, and I emailed Bad Timing, and they sent me the record early.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I'm sure I like blew up your phone telling you how great it was.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I wrote a review like probably like 5 or 6 weeks before the album came out. Like, it was like early.
Yeah.
But I was like, fuck, this is so good, and I need to just like shout to the world how great it is.
Yeah.
But like, they got some pretty big press. Mm-hmm. Like, didn't they get like Vice or
I think
Noisy?
So yeah, one
I
of
guess.
Those big, you know, outlets did it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they got a couple big reviews like that, and the people who did review it, like, I don't recall any like negative mm-hmm. reviews really.
Yeah, I think it was, a lot of it was talking about the growth, right, from their self-titled to this one, and then Inside the Sea EP, which we talked about Just Friends earlier, that was on Inside the Sea. Like, that growth there, I think, was astronomical, you know? And I'm pretty sure, like, I know I said it earlier, like, comparing it to Dream World's Futures, I think that's exactly kind of, and I don't think they were aiming for that kind of record at all, but, like, I think it wound up being that, in the sense of it's a much more, like, emotionally, and I don't think their first one is, like, an immature record or anything like that. I think this one is just, like, more emotionally, like, there, and it's much more musically, like, evolved, you know? And it was such, like, a big, not even, like, a big jump, but, like, it was such, like, a solid jump for them, you know, that, like, they kept their sound, really, but they rounded it out, you know, and there's no, like, there's not really, like, those kind of, quote unquote, I don't know if harsh vocals are the right way to describe them, but, you know, on this first record, they had some of that, and this one, not so much, you know? And I just wish there was something that we got after it, you know? I think
that... I mean, but they said what they would say in, like, interviews and everything kind of leading up to this was, like, yeah, if this record doesn't hit, then that's probably it for us as a band.
Yeah.
And so they kind of, like, they never... Because I would remember this. Like, you know that you and I would have been, like, on the phone, you know, discussing this and, like, crying together for 2 hours, like, if they had actually announced they were breaking up. But they never said, oh, we're going on hiatus, we're breaking up, we're done. And like, you know, so they put out this record. It was, like, October 2015. Mm-hmm. And they did, you know, they never went, I think, more than, like, a year and a half without a show. But they became pretty quiet. They deleted, like, a lot of their posts on the internet. I mean, they scrubbed a lot of shit from socials.
Yeah.
A lot of shit. And something you and I talked about. Like, why are they doing that?
Yeah.
And, you know, they were just kind of done, I think, after, like, the tour kind of wrapped up for this record and all. And, like, I don't know. You know, they got great reviews, but clearly, like, a couple of great reviews and great outlets aren't enough.
All right.
So I think it's, like, really bad luck.
Yeah.
I think also, like, I don't know if we can talk about, like, can we talk about legacy from the fan perspective?
Sure, absolutely.
So I think, like, I don't know. And like, Pentimento fans, like, love this record, right? But it didn't catch on, and, like, on a larger scale. And, like, yeah, definitely part of that is, like, the industry stuff, you know? Label situation and... you know, the way the world is, who knows? Like, the label situation, I think, was tough, and not getting on bigger tours. Because, yeah, they had, like, a couple opening slots, but nothing, like, massive that was, like, gonna push them to the next level.
Sure.
You know, they never had, like, a viral moment online. Not really. I don't know. I kind of, like, and this is what I was thinking as I was listening to this record, you know, the other day for the first time in, like, a while, that it's, I don't want to say one note, because it's not, and that would be simplifying it too much, because it's not one note.
Right.
It's not one emotion here, right? This is a record that talks about a lot of, like, pain, and, like, both pain from the perspective of, like, someone who struggles with internal issues of their own, whether that's depression or self-worth issues or anxiety or you know, fear of failure, as well as someone who has been hurt by other people, you know, Clever Reason, I think, great example there. But this record, and, like, yeah, I know you talked about it with Tiger Eye, but this record doesn't really have, like, a hope in it. Like, it doesn't really offer you emotionally. Like, musically, the record is, like, phenomenal. But emotionally, it doesn't really offer you any resolution. And not to say a record has to.
Sure.
But I do kind of wonder if that might be something that, like, if that had been different, if it would have caught on more. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And not to say that like every record has to be happy in order to be like well received, because I don't think that's true at all. But like having, you even think of Jimmy Eat World, like mm-hmm. yeah, there's always like some bits of hope in the record.
Sure,
you know. Mm-hmm. I think with Good Charlotte, there's always like some hope in the record, or if not hope or optimism, like, you know, a resolution, right? Like an emotional resolution to kind of round things.
Sure.
I don't know. And who's to say what it was that, like, you know, caused label issues to happen? Who knows? Like, it's a cutthroat industry and so-and-so might have thought some other band was cooler instead. Sure. You know, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, I know. It's tough. It really does just feel like bad luck, right? Like, it feels like...
Yeah, it really does.
They didn't really do anything wrong. I don't think that we know of, and I can't imagine, like, you know, they did. A lot of this, you know, music industry is just, you know, right time and right place, you know?
Yeah.
Always been that way. Go on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you had the Dangerous Summer in your notes, and mm-hmm. I think... that's a great comparison, because that's also like a kind of pop rock indie mm-hmm. emo band that, you know, yes, definitely Dangerous Summer was bigger than Pentimento. Like, I saw Dangerous Summer in Asbury Park. I think I mostly went for A Will Away, but like it was like 100 cap room, sure. but like it was sold the F mm-hmm. out.
Yeah.
Pentimento did not sell out a room like that.
Yeah.
They just didn't. I mean, maybe at some points, yeah. Because I think, like, when I saw them when they did Studio at Webster Hall on this tour, that got a bunch of people.
Yeah.
But they were not, Pentimento was not, like, consistently selling stuff.
Sure. Out. Yeah.
But I still think of, like, the Dangerous Summer as another band that, like, didn't, you know, would have these, like, really emotional records. Mm-hmm. And they would have, like, a really devoted fan base. But they never really broke
through, sure
mm-hmm. you know, I mean, they tour a lot, they make great records, but the Dangerous Summer never really
correct
broke
yeah yeah. And the Dangerous Summer had, you know, they so they had a their first record came, well, Reach for the Sun came out 2009, I think, that was kind of similar to this in the sense that it got a lot of great press. You know, they had a lot of great press. I mean, they were also on Hopeless, so you had you had Hopeless behind right. you, kind of pushing you. You know, and then War Paint came out, their second record, and they kind of sold okay. You know, did pretty good. And they also kind of got caught up, but there's, you know, the things that they got caught up in were not really the same, because they had a lot of kind of band member drama right at that time. You know, which they were able to resolve, you know, they broke up and they resolved and then are back together, right? I would love to think that Pentimento could do the same thing. But again, you know, like I had in the notes that, you know, the Dangerous Summer was bigger. But it just depends on if Pentimento even wants to, you know?
Yeah, so like I guess I'll bring this up. So I have been to Buffalo to see Pentimento 3 times. And without stops, it's about a little less than a 6-hour drive, sure. at least, you know, when I was going from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. You know, the last time I went, I picked up our mutual friend, Joel Funk, in, like, you know, kind of the Albany area, uh-huh. we'll say. And so that made the trip a little longer. But, you know, so they headlined the Town Ballroom. I don't think it was sold out, but it was a pretty good crowd. Incredible show. I mean, all the bands were so great. Like, I think Young English played that too. It was like, wow, it was a great time.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
Yeah, and what, you know, they played a new song, right? So like me and Joel and our other friend Scott Fuger and Scott's now fiance Liz, we had all gone out to brunch together. And we were, the day of the show, and we were all kind of like, haha, what if they play a new song tonight? Like, laughing about it, because we were just like, they're not going to play a new song. Yeah. They're not going to be back. They're just like, you know what? Like, we want to play shows once in a while. And then me and Joel are like standing on the balcony, kind of like leaning over. And Jerry says, like, one of the reasons we got back together, uh-huh. and me and Joel just look at each other like, what? Like, you know, just talking about how much this all means to them and uh-huh. how grateful they are that people give a shit. and how cool it is that people care and the connection that they feel.
Yeah.
And then they played a new song. It was called Wrong. And that was, you know, I texted you as I was leaving the show. And yeah. I was like, Logan, I know it's like midnight, but I'm going to put a post on Substream right now. And I'm just going to publish it. There's a new Pentimento song.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I think I was just like, Logan, I'm just going to publish it. It's midnight.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. I was like, it's a new Pentimento song. And, you know, I talked to them after the show. I remember me and Joel talking to them. And I don't. You know, they didn't really have a plan for releasing it, you know? And like, Jerry tours with Senses Fail, and they all have other jobs, you know? Mike has, like, a marketing job or something,
sure.
Like an office, you know? They all have, like, other jobs, other things they do. They all have busy lives, you know? And Jerry, I know Jerry was like, yeah, you know, we would love to, but... They didn't have like a plan for release. I don't think it had been recorded at that point.
Sure.
I'm sure if it had been recorded even we would have heard it by now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was July 5th, 2019,
right?
And
nothing since.
You know, nothing since. Yeah. I mean, maybe things might have been different if 2020 had gone differently and shows were able to happen. You know, maybe it was not necessarily that, but like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think there would be excitement if they got back
together. I do.
But
too.
I feel like they would definitely need, like, the right team to kind of, like, really, really make that happen and, like, you know, build that interest.
Yeah.
But
I think they, you know, I think, first of all, you know, if they got back together, they would be, you know, that would be, like, it would. They're not a headlining tour cross country get back together band, right? I mean,
No.
I don't think there's the demand for that. I mean, you could do a show, or you could do an opening slot on a tour, you know. And
they needed was like the right opening slot, and I feel like that's what they
have them
got.
To
like,
Jimmy
they never
World.
Got the right.
I would love that.
No, but I don't think that's it though, because like most Jimmy Eat World fans are like. Not necessarily like, oh yeah, I like really want to check out this new band. That's you know, they need like a band that's, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they would be like a Good Charlotte opener, but like I say that because Good Charlotte fans are like psyched because I think Good Charlotte fans are a little younger than Jimmy Eat World, and they're like a different band, but like. Good Charlotte fans are like so psyched to find out who's opening, you know. They need a band who like their they would need to open for a band who like their fan base would be so psyched to find out who the opener is.
And yeah, and I don't know who that is. I mean, I agree. I think Good Charlotte's fans would embrace them absolutely.
Oh yeah.
I don't want to say that's not a good fit, because like honestly, like after Generation RX, like isn't it like a good fit? Like it would almost make sense, you know.
I mean, I would say, like, I just throw that out because I think of them as an example of a band that, like, has a big fan base and has a fan base that is excited to find out who the openers are. Like, anytime someone from Good Charlotte tweets about a band they like, all the fans are all over it. Water Parks. I mean, I don't know if I would see Pentimento in Water Parks. Maybe not. But, like, Water Parks, too. You know, Austin... tweets about something, people are all over it.
Yeah, Water Park stands are all over it. Yeah.
Yeah, All Time Low, you know? I mean, so there's a handful of bands like that. Mm-hmm. I will say, like, if a Good Charlotte Pentimento tour were to happen, I would just, like, pass away.
Yeah.
I would just completely... Oh, wait, well, can I tell you about a tour that never happened?
Go
that
for
was
it.
Supposed
I
to
love
happen?
It. Yeah, absolutely.
So this would have been, like... April 2015, Major League played the Gramercy Theater in New York. I want to say with like Hands Like Houses or something.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I think. I'm not positive. But I was just talking to Brian and I just remember saying to him, I was like, man, I wish you guys would tour with like Pentimento. And he said they were supposed to. And he said there was supposed to be a tour. And this would have been like spring 2015.
Oh, man.
There was supposed to be a tour that was Heart to Heart, Forever Came Calling, Major League, and Pentimento. Oof. And like the day before it was announced, Major League got offered the Senses Fail tour.
Yeah.
Heart to Heart and Forever Came Calling still toured together, and Pentimento did a tour. I don't know if Pentimento
what did they
a
do
tour,
that
like,
spring?
That same
I don't know
time,
if they did
right?
anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, because I saw Heart to Heart and Forever Came Calling, and then like 2 days later, I saw Pentimento the first time with Candy Hearts.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I heard about that tour. Brian told me about that tour that never happened, and I was like, God damn it.
Oh, man.
Like, yeah, the Senses Fail tour was the right move, but.
Yeah. I mean, they had to do that, absolutely. Yeah, you had to.
Yeah.
You had to do that. Yes, right. Okay, I remember in, I think they did some shows with Candy Hearts. You mentioned that, and I think they did a tour with A Loss for Words, I think, and Pentimento did that year,
yeah.
Early that year,
so,
at least.
Maybe, I know, so I saw them, it was March, like, March 31st, I think, 2013.
Sure.
It was, like, 2 days, sorry, I'm about to sneeze. It was, like, 2 days before I was about to present my, like, senior thesis paper. Had skipped class for that Heart to Heart show, but that's a different story. And then I don't remember what they did that summer because I was on tour that summer, but I do remember Pentimento, Forever Came Calling, Real Friends, and Mixtapes did a tour that fall that I happened to catch in Norfolk, Virginia when I happened to be in Norfolk, Virginia on tour and have a night off.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was a whole thing.
So I double checked this. I fact checked myself here just so I can get this on the podcast. So just so we're out there.
Yes.
All right. So I got it confused. The A Loss for Words tour was 2015. I was like 2 years
that's
off.
That's right. That's right.
Spring of 2013, they did March Madness tour with Candy Hearts and Allison Weiss. Then summer 2013, they did Less Than Jake and Hostage Calm for the East Coast tour.
Which
a phenomenal. I think I saw them. No, I saw them in 2012 for the first time. But man, that Hostage Calm and Less Than Jake tour, Hostage Calm was a bit phenomenal. That's a whole sidetrack there. But man, that would be a sweet tour. And you know, the last thing that I think about Pentimento, is I had this in my notes too because it's so crazy. Like I remember, you know, before this record came out, they did that show in Buffalo with Weezer and Brand New, right? And that was at a big arena. And I was like, here we go. Like, this is it. Like, here they go. They're going to get big. And then they didn't, right?
Yeah, but, like, do Weezer fans give a shit
probably
about
not.
Opening,
no, probably
you
not.
Know?
You know,
like,
but I just,
that's the thing.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, like, it's a big show. Like, this is great for them, you know? And, yeah, nothing ever came after that, sadly.
That's the thing is they never got that tour with a band whose fans would be like excited for the opener. That would have made the difference for them.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it wasn't like massive.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on what might have been a band that would have been great for them to go out with?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't think there's anything. If we're, you know, there's some that I think of musically, like, but I don't think there's anybody that we talked about earlier.
Maybe. What do you think? Fall Out Boy, maybe?
Maybe. I mean, potentially.
But also, like, I saw Fall Out Boy in 2018, and it was like Machine Gun Kelly and Every Time I Die opening, and like nobody gave a shit about
exactly
it.
Yeah, Fall Out Boy fans, I mean, I guess so. For Fall Out Boy fans, first of all, that tour made no sense for like Fall Out Boy fans in general, aside from like MGK maybe, you know. But like Every Time I Die on that tour, I don't get it. Like, I know they like wanted to get in front of like a bigger audience, but like those are not like their target demographic. Like, I don't think any Fall Out Boy fan walked into that show and walked out an Every Time I Die fan. You know, I think there was certainly overlap between the two. Like, I think of people like maybe our age that like when, you know, Fall Out Boy was around pre-hiatus and Every Time I Die was like still coming, you know.
But like Fall Out Boy's audience
is
more.
I don't think like any young, like
pop
fun Fall Out Boy fans that are like, as it says fun Fall Out Boy, I don't know why I said fun Fall Out Boy fans. Any young Fall Out Boy fans that are like, certainly like younger than us in their early 20s or in high school, I don't think they came out of that tour loving Every Time I Die. You know, and I think there were probably some parents there. They're like, "What the hell is this?" Like, So, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Because I have, I'm staring at like a Simple Plan, you know, thing on my wall. I'm like that maybe.
Yeah.
I really like, I said that off the cuff, but like, I really could pull for a good Charlotte Pentimento tour.
Yeah.
And I don't say that just out of self-interest. I say that because that's like a band who I think their fans would like Pentimento, but they would be, they're a little different.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be like a one note kind of bill.
Sure.
And that's a band whose fans are excited at like what is kind of recommended. And I think could be like a similar-ish demographic.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, in terms of like the age of fans. You know, yeah, like Taking Back Sunday is great and like sonically is like a closer comparison, but like I don't think Taking Back Sunday's fans necessarily give a shit about who's opening.
Not particularly. You know? Not unless it's like a band they already know, right? I mean, because they did their 20th anniversary tour or whatever, 2019, and there's a and Red City Radio was opening for them. And I don't think, you know, I'm sure Red City Radio gained a few fans here and there, but I don't think it was monumental enough to shift the careers of Red City Radio. And I don't think it would be to shift the careers of Pentimento.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I would agree with like a good Charlotte. Give me like a good Charlotte Simple Plan Pentimento tour. Like that would be solid. Because I think then what you get is
passing away.
You get good Charlotte and Simple Plan that you get, I think that would be sold out shows, right? Just across the board, you'd probably get
good
sold
Charlotte,
out shows.
Yellow Card, Pentimento.
Get me Yellow Card back
because
together.
Yellow Card,
but
well, right, that.
Yeah.
But like, you know, when I saw Yellow Card, like definitely the couple times I've seen Yellow Card, they've had more of a, like a slightly more, maybe this is like deaf, I'm thinking back to like high school, but like a slightly more normie audience.
Sure.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah, that's about it. I just don't know what else it would look like, you know. And I don't, if I'm being unfortunately honest, I don't think we get a Pentimento reunion,
no.
Which is fine.
I mean, I would love it, but it's, you know, and maybe like when it's safe for shows to happen, mm-hmm. maybe they'll do, you know, a show in Buffalo again, but who knows? And it's like, you know, they all work and they all have jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Like they, you know, Jerry, I'm sure, will go back to touring with Census Vale when that happens. And, you know, I know they've all worked at venues and, you know, I don't necessarily expect like a reunion. I would love it.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, maybe they need like a viral TikTok,
they do.
You know,
they
I don't
do.
Know what would be the song that would go viral and like what clip it would be. But like,
I don't know,
you know, maybe they need that. And that kind
it's
of
TikTok, anything can happen.
Renew some interest.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing I'll say this is I don't know that their fans would gravitate towards it, but a Census Vale Pentimento tour would work. Not just because of the connection being there, but like, you know, Census Vale fans, like, I don't know that they're like obsessed with openers, but I think like they would get into it, you know.
Census Vale has always had like really good openers.
They do.
I've seen Census Vale like a handful of times exclusively because like I want to see the opener.
Yeah. I love
like,
it.
And then I see Census Vale and I'm like, oh yeah, Census Vale is really good.
Census Vale is great.
That's always what happens.
It's amazing. I love that. I love it. Well, Mala, do we have any final thoughts here on I No Longer, aside from just yelling at people to listen to the record?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a great record. It's definitely, like, I don't know if I would say it's, like, cathartic. This is definitely, like, I kind of want to sit in my sadness record. So, like, prepare yourself. But I think it's a great record. You know, it holds up. I mean, it's very well made and well produced and well written. You know, it's definitely like prepare to like kind of sit in your feelings when you listen to this.
Yeah, it's not a very, I think I said it, it's not a very hopeful record, right? Like it's not a...
No, I wouldn't say that.
It's not a record that you're going to listen to when like, you know, if you're in a... It's not going to make you feel better about if there's something, you know, stuff you're going through. In a sense, like, oh, you know, but it was in the sense of, like, it's a very relatable record, you know, in a lot of ways.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that's where that, like, almost relief comes in. You know, if you want to say, like, okay, like, it's a record that'll let you feel you're not alone, but it's not going to, like, you know, it's not like a it gets better soon type of record, you know, they don't offer that hopefulness to it, which I think is the beauty in this specific record, that they're just kind of like, yeah, like there's no solution. It's just kind of what it is.
And that's right. And that's valid. It's like, cause like, it's okay to like talk about your feelings and like, your feelings are like mostly negative feelings, like sadness and hurt mm-hmm. and self-worth issues and insecurities and fear of failure and, you know, anger and anxiety and like all that. You don't have to have that when you talk about your feelings. You
yeah.
know? That's like, that's a life lesson, you know, like you can just like share your feeling and not be like, yeah, and I feel pretty good about it. Like, no, you can just like be sad.
Yeah, absolutely. You can just be sad. And that is, you know, there's always not an immediate solution to it, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And that's what this record is. It's pain nonstop. And it is
yeah.
a solid record that I think everybody should listen to at least once, you know, give it a shot.
Yeah.
That's it.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Well, Molly, I appreciate it. I'm glad we were able to get to come on here and talk about this.
Yeah, this was very fun.
It was great. I could do this for another hour or so, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
We could do a track by track, and that'd be a whole lot of time.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I would love to, like, hear them, like, talk about this record sometime. And I don't think it's this podcast. Yeah. I would just love to hear them talk about it, like, in hindsight, you know, which...
Oh, yeah.
I would pay to see that as, like, a live stream of them just dissecting their own record.
Oh, God, if
only. Absolutely. Well, Molly, I appreciate it. I will let you go for the day, and thank you for your time. I will have everyone link to Generation GC and see what we can do.
Perfect.
That's a great thing you've got going on.
Perfect. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, Molly, I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you, Logan. ¶¶